overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
There was a lady who used to come here years ago. Her name is Cindy Swearingen, yoga teacher. And she's from Scottsboro, and she met a woman. And the woman's husband was going to prison. And she said to Cindy, I don't know how I'm going to deal with all this and all the stress and all this stuff. And Cindy said, there's only one thing you need to do, and that's breathe. What do you mean, one thing I need to do? She said, whenever you get stressed out, she said, I just want you to take a deep breath and breathe. She said it was years later. And she runs into the lady. The husband's now out of prison. And she came running up to Cindy. And she said, Cindy. And she said, oh, yeah. She said, do you remember me? And she said, I was this distraught woman years ago and came up to you. And you told me the one thing I needed to do was to breathe. She said, well, it worked. So just so you know, it's not just a nice, feely song. There is something really beautiful about exhaling. And oftentimes when I'll be in the receiving line at the end of the service and someone comes in, they have their story and they get all gagged with their thing, what I find is that they hold their breath. And I have to say, exhale. So breathing is huge. To learn to consciously breathe, you know, that's really a profound spiritual message. So when you ask what are the great tools in your toolkit on the spiritual journey, the breath is one of the greatest ones. And you know, breath means spirit. So here I am talking about not knowing in a world that really wants to know. Because people come up to me and say, what does that mean, David? And I'll say, well, it doesn't really matter what it means to me. What does it mean to you? You know, Joseph Campbell would say, what is the purpose of life? And Joseph Campbell said, life has no purpose. We give it a purpose. He said, maybe the purpose is to live, to be alive. Right? But see, the mind wants to know. Ralph Waldo Emerson says, we all seek for certainty. But only to the degree that we are uncertain is there any hope for us. What does that guy know? We want stability and certainty. We want to know when we finish high school, we'll go to college and we'll get married and we'll have 2.3 kids and a house in the suburbs with a... or not. So what if it's not going to be what we think it is? I studied with a sadguru like Bob here. I've had a very, very long history spiritually. And I remember there was a sadguru that came to Nashville, and I went up with Cindy Swearingen, and I sat at the foot of the guru, and I did my pranayams, and I went on a very rigid vegan diet, all raw foods. And he said, this sadguru, who's now quite famous, he said, if you knew what your life was going to look like, he said, you would kill yourself. Well, now, you listen to that when someone says that. So what if our life isn't supposed to be predicted? That it's supposed to be truly a mystery that unfolds. And when you can embrace the mystery of then life, then it can be this beautiful unfoldment that's so much greater than anything you could have conceptualized. Wow, sounds counterintuitive, doesn't it? That we could have the life, but it's not going to be your life. It's going to be Spirit's life as you, if we're willing to step out of the certainty and the idea, the illusion, the dream. You know, when people get divorced, sometimes I've noticed that they have to grieve. But it's not just the grief of the loss of the relationship. They have to grieve the loss of the dream that they had around the relationship. So it's so much bigger than what we think it is. So when we get a little bit older, we get to see, in Hinduism, they talk about Maya, how we get trapped in Maya. And Maya, translated, means the illusion. But if you look at what illusion means, and Maya means, it's just the play of consciousness in the world. So yes, there is this play. And all of life is a stage, and we're on this play, and there's many acts to that play. It could be a breezy comedy or a melodrama. How many are out in melodrama land? Oh, I know there's a few of you. But I choose to have it as a breezy comedy at a certain stage because I realize it's just the play of the dream. So then you study with a Don Miguel Ruiz, and he talks about the mitote. It's all about the dream, and whose dream are we in? Are we in somebody else's dream, or are we in our dream? Glory G did this beautiful ceremony on Wednesday night, and she'll recreate something. It's never the same. You never step in the stream the same time twice. But she asked that question, you know, what is the medicine of your wound? And she closed this ceremony by passing oracle cards around. And I thought it was interesting. Some people wanted to look at the card before they chose it. I don't know why they do that. It's supposed to be, you know, spontaneous. But anyway, I played by the rules. So I took the card. And the card that I drew was the gatherer. And it had three aspects to the gatherer. One was the essence of the gatherer. The second was the invitation of the gatherer. And then the third was the medicine of the gatherer. And as I vaguely remember, it said, the essence of the gatherer is somebody who is a gardener who plants many, many plants and has a huge cornucopia of results at the end of his tenure. And 69 years of age, I have incredible gardens and I have a spiritual more than I really, so I have gathered an awful lot of information. The invitation then is to go out and to find that singular thread of truth that's common to all of them. Because it was Oliver Wendell Holmes says, the truth is incontrovertible. It shines through every single teaching if you have ears to hear. And then the medicine would be then to apply it in an integrated way to life. Not that it's a secondhand information from a Jesus or a Buddha, but that it's an integrated cookbook through the matrix of this life form so that it can be organic and natural and free and real, to be real. So it's Earth Day today. And I was thinking about how to honor the mother in that beautiful place of not knowing. And I'm glad that Bob is here because I thought of the Bible, which is probably the first thing that I gathered as a young child. But it took me to my adult stage before I understood what the Bible was really saying. Because the Bible is a storybook. It's a book of myth and metaphor. It's not meant to be taken literally. And so the very first page of the Bible, it says, in the beginning, God. So basically it says, in the beginning, all there was this presence in the universe. And darkness was on the face of the earth. So darkness is the face of God. Ah! And God said, let there be light. The light was the Shekinah, the light within. So if you begin to play with it, it's pointing to something much bigger, the darkness out of which the light emerges. And then they tell this story, this allegory of the first man and woman who eat from the tree of judgment, of right and wrong. And as soon as they ate from the tree of right and wrong, they were expelled from the garden. The garden's name was Gan Eden. Gan Eden means a consciousness of bliss and wholeness. And as soon as you start judging right and wrong, you can no longer be in a space of divine presence and divine love because you're into duplicity. And therefore was the fall of man, and we have a whole religious wars based on right and wrong and duplicitous thinking. Then I thought of Moses came along. Moses, this is Earth Day. So Moses was in Egypt. Egypt is a consciousness that's bound. She's saying about being unbound. It's being bound by the Pharaoh, which represents the ego. So what does Moses do? He kills one of the Egyptians, which is he kills the limited thought, and he has to leave Egypt, which is that consciousness that's bound by ego, and he goes to a place called Midian. Remember, this is a metaphor. It's an allegory. It's not literal. Midian is a place of mental science where he digs, he watches the sheep around the wells, the gentle thoughts going within, and he's there for 40 years, probably in the science of mind for 40 years, until ultimately the bush starts to speak to him. And it says a bush was filled with light but was not consumed by that light. What if the bush was always on fire with spirit, but Moses finally tuned into it? Because his shaman came out, and what did the bush say? Not literally, but metaphorically. It said, Moses, take off your shoes right where you stand is holy ground. Holy cow. He could no longer live in a science of mind belief system anymore about changing your thinking. He had to go into the wilderness where he was radically into this I don't know place, but I can rely on manna from heaven. And manna are not little biscuits that fall from the sky. It's the inspiration that you need in the instant that you need it. I live in the wilderness where manna from heaven is always coming. That's the deeper truth that the Bible was seeking to reveal to those who have ears to hear. And then came this intoxicated bhakti yoga in the New Testament called Jesus, Yahshua ben Joseph, Yahshua the son of Joseph, and he was speaking shamanic language. He was saying, be like a lily. They don't toil, they don't struggle, yet Solomon in all his splendor was not arrayed as one of these. To really simplify your life, he said, lay not up your treasure on earth where moth and rust do corrupt, but lay them in this kingdom that's within you and it's all around you. And the Aramaic word for kingdom, and the only message he gave was the kingdom. That's the only message, not I'm the only way and the truth. No enlightened teacher would ever say that. That's hearsay. No, his message was Malkutha, and Malkutha represents the sovereign counsel of God that abides within you. So it's important that we turn within and we discover our own truth, the truth that unhides itself, as the Greek said, because it's there all along. But we have to get that foggy thinking out of the way, and then the truth just shines right through the darkness, if we're willing. And where does it happen? It happens in nature. Jesus said, you know, I of myself do nothing, it's the Father within that doeth the work. He says, I really can't do anything. You might as well say, I of myself know nothing. I don't know. I'm so glad what you said in the revealing service. I don't know anything, because you're not supposed to know, but there's something within you that does. Could we tune into that something? I'll tell you, it's not going to give you concept and ideas and thoughts and strategies. It's going to give you a felt awareness of always being connected and supported and loved. It's going to let you know that you are well right now, and that you don't have to get something out there for that wellness to be revealed, because it's at hand. The wholeness is at hand. Ernest Holmes says, it's the perception of this wholeness that already is, that is all healing. Not some healing, all healing. So when we know that we're already whole, perfect, and complete in this presence, not identified with our problem, and the irony is the problem is the doorway where the light comes through, then we stop resisting it and trying to get rid of it and trying to have somebody else give you your answer, because nobody has your answer. I know that. I'm going a little haywire here. Let me give you a little Jeff Foster. Jeff Foster, he's one of my heroes. This is about not knowing, not having the answer. He says this, be willing to not know, to stumble sometimes, to bow before the unknown. Isn't the definition of insanity always doing what you've always done and expecting to get something else? So he says, what if you could bow to the unknown? Let the questions stay a while, and do not try to annihilate them with premature answers. You know, it is a violation when someone tries to give you an answer to something that you don't want an answer for. What if the juice is in the question? Rilke says, court the question. One of my favorite books is Robert Mueller's How Then Shall We Live, Knowing That We Shall Die. And after a heart attack, you know what death looks like. You know, I thought that was it. Now, how then shall I live? I'm a month and a couple of days old. How then shall I live? And he asks four questions, not so you can annihilate them with an answer, but so you can stay with the question. And his first question is, then who am I? Who am I? Am I identifying with my career, my label, my gender, my whatever, my political party? Or am I identifying with divine love, the expansive creation of the universe as me? The second question he asks is, what do you love? Could you let what you love be what you do? I love to grow things. I'm a crazy gardener. I know it's kind of my addiction. And I have these beautiful gardens, and we're having the garden party, and you're welcome to come. We're using it as a fundraiser for the center. Last June, Trey took us up to Carrig Moor, which was this botanical garden that was a quarry up there in Wisconsin. And the woman left in her will that she would leave Carrig Moor to someone who would maintain the gardens. And he spent top dollar so that I could stay in this garden, because he knew my addiction was being fed in this incredible garden. No people, quarries with flowers everywhere. And being that I'm a little bit of an addict, I went through the yard and I started picking little seedlings that had seeded themselves in the yard, and I came back with my box of little cuttings from Carrig Moor. And I found an area where the city had devastated by putting in those pipes in the lines, the gas lines, and they left a big mud patch. So I said, here's the Carrig Moor garden. So I went and I put these little plants in there. And just yesterday, coming up in the mud was the very rare yellow lady slipper blooming. She's almost extinct, and there she is growing in the mud. She's only supposed to grow in the best of soils, so that I could stand in awe of her. And Phyllis Light, she said, oh my God, that was nearly harvested to extinction because it is the herb for angina when people have heart attacks. So it had to bloom in my garden. Anyway, so what do you love? That was the second question. The third question is then, how are you going to live your life? How are you going to live your life? Are you going to live in gratitude? Are you going to let tears come when they will? Are you going to embrace every opportunity that you call a problem really is a gift for you? And then the last question, he said, in this beautiful book that is not meant to be answered, then what gifts do I bring to the family of this earth? What gifts do I bring? We have a beautiful refuge recovery on Monday nights, and maybe this Thursday. And Jean and Anne-Marie come and they shepherd that. That's a gift that they bring with their beautiful hearts. So we get to ask what gift. Glory G brings her beautiful gift with this shamanic thing, which is just amazing because I get to experience the hummingbird and the snake and the imaginal realms. You know, that's what I really appreciated because I came out of that lineage of studying with the shamans, and they take you into this right-brained place where the imaginal cells lift you off out of your logical mind, and you begin to discover spirit animals. You know, I always wanted a beautiful gazelle or a lion or a tiger, and baby Speck came up. I guess she was in class, but she just wouldn't leave. So when spirit animals came, she just knocked me. She said, I'm here. You don't need another spirit animal. Basically, she did that. So you know what? I had to embrace it. And what if they come here to give us their message of unconditional love, if we have ears to hear and eyes to see? So he goes on to talk about not knowing. And he says, dear friend, and this is for you, Kiki. Dear friend, he said, please do not try to make your decision now. Do not shut any possibility out of your heart, and honor this place of not knowing where you find yourself. We don't have to come up with an answer right now. I'm just going to rest in not knowing. Look what's happening with our country, Korea. Who would have thought? You know, the environment, guns. Could we rest in not knowing? I saw Barbara Bush in an interview, and she said, I'm not afraid of death. You know, she says, George and I, she said, when you've lived as long as we are, she said, I have a deep abiding faith. And she apparently lost her little girl to leukemia. And she said, and I know I'll be with her. Wow. Now, that's a knowing that she had, that there was no fear of letting go of this form. So honor this place of not knowing, he says, and slow down and breathe. Oh, gosh, there's that word again. Sink into wonderment. Gosh, I love hanging out in wonderment. Why did a yellow lady slipper decide to grow in my mud? She's not supposed to be there. Was it so that I could fall on my knees and bow to her? Was it so if I have another heart attack, I can go suck on her flower? I don't know, but she's right there. Answers will appear only when they are ready to appear, and not an instant before. So when the questions have been fully honored and loved, now remember, the questions honored and loved, to stay in the question, you know, how then shall I live, knowing that I'm a perishable commodity? Could every moment be sacred for me? How then shall I live, I don't know, here in Alabama, knowing that we are a revolutionary teaching and to honor it at the highest level? Answers will appear only when they're ready and when the questions have been fully honored and loved. Do not label this place that you're struggling with indecision. He said it is more alive than that. It is a place where possibilities grow. My friend Bob studied, he said he's read everything of Deepak Chopra, and I probably taught everything Deepak wrote, except he's written 100 books, so I don't think I've taught everything. But I did teach the 7 Habits of Highly Successful People, and one of his 7 habits, the biggie, was they live in uncertainty because they surrender to the totality of possibilities. Ernest Holmes talked about the universe as the totality of possibilities. So what if we could surrender into that? Not our conceptual idea of what our life should look like, which by its very nature is a dream. What if we could surrender into the uncertainty, into the mystery of the allness of life, and then let it guide us to a shamanic workshop where we inquire again, yet again, and we listen as if for the first time to that guidance from within ourselves. Instead of running away from the wound, we open the wound and let the wound give its healing medicine. Because if you run away from it, you'll never get away from it. And you begin to see things with new eyes yet again. Amazing how this works. So don't label this place indecision. It's more alive than that. It is the place where possibilities can grow. It is a place where uncertainty is now sacred. We don't know where your career is going to go, do we? And that's a sacred place to be. And he's smiling. Yes. There is courage in staying close. There is strength in not knowing. And there is power in doubt. So, my friend, please know, there is simply no choice that you have to make now. Stop abusing yourself. Except one thing. You have to breathe, he says, and breathe again. And trust this intelligence with the big eye that is beyond your local mind. Beyond your local mind. Wow. Could we know ourselves as the infinite mind, as the creative mind of the universe, that doesn't think in terms of thoughts and concepts and beliefs, because all belief arises from ego. So when we let go of all our beliefs, there's still a knowing that's there. And it's very intimate, and it's always been there. Little children have it. Little children talk to fairies and angels. What if they're really real, but we condition them out of our children so that we can grow up and be logical? But we're not here to be logical. We're here to be magical and mysterious and awaken to the wonderment of life. So trust this intelligence that's beyond your mind. And ultimately, he says, a decision will begin to grow. But for today, nourish the ground of not knowing. For today, nourish the ground of not knowing. My Zen calendar yesterday, since it's Earth Day, a monk came to his master, Chao Chao, and he says, "What is the way?" And Chao Chao replied, "The cypress tree in the courtyard." Well, today it was Albert Einstein. And Albert Einstein said, "Look deeply into nature, and then you will understand everything better." To look deeply into nature, the cypress tree in the courtyard. Victor Hugo said, "To be like the bird, who pausing for a while on boughs too slight, feels them give way beneath her, yet sings, knowing she hath wings." Jesus said to be like the lily of the field, and not to toil and not to struggle. Jesus said to, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." So to be like a tree, to be like a rock. It was Trey looked in his, he keeps copious records in his calendar of weather. And so we went back 15 years ago this week, and I was leading a retreat in Lake Gunnersville with Phyllis Light. And in this, the participants were asked to get an object from nature as an oracle. Remember, turn to nature and you will deeply understand. And I'll never forget this woman. She came back and she had a rock in her hand and she was sobbing. I said, what's going on, Mary? "This rock knows it's a rock, and I don't have a clue who I am." I said, "Oh, that's great, Mary, that's great." So what if, you know, the Bible says, "Cleave to the branch, and lo, I am there. Lift up the rock, and lo, I am there." What if on this Earth Day, we have the opportunity to experience the depth of who we are? So I'm going to give you one more little Jeff thing. This is where we stand. When everything is lost, and we were desperate. And so many of the people that came to that retreat were at that lost place, we were at that transition place. And it's not about giving them answers, it's not about getting rid of that lost feeling, but it's about observing right in the midst of that, there is this ground of being that's there. And he writes this, "You are lost without hope. Your heart has shattered into a million tiny pieces today, and you cannot put the jigsaw puzzle of your life back together, no matter how hard you try. You no longer have the reference image of the dream that you once had." He said, "Doubts and questions are raging like wildfire in the vast field of your being, and you cannot find a place of connection anywhere. Even the bird song at first light seems to be happening on a remote planet. Everything that seemed permanent has been smashed. All your certainties have melted suddenly into thin air, and nobody seems to have the answers that you seek. Not even the gurus and the self-help experts who once promised so much to you." He said, "This is the time that I offer no words of guidance. No hope, no promises, no dream of this devastation ever ceasing. You are lost without hope, my friend, and what is left is but a radical commitment to the to the ground upon which you stand, a merit of humility to the origin, your birthplace, and your final place of rest. It's not about running away anymore. It's about stopping the war within yourself and seeing that right where you are is holy ground, even if it's an uncomfortable holy ground. So he says, sometimes we fall apart, and sometimes in the midst of falling apart, we remember more clearly where our feet are rooted. Anybody find the grace of falling apart besides me? God, isn't it great? When your heart is completely broken open, then you feel the love flowing, and you don't need that wall to protect you and hide from the world anymore. He said, sometimes we fall apart, and sometimes in the midst of falling apart, we remember more clearly where our feet are rooted. On this earth, on the ground that we stand on, held by gravity, always falling, yet somehow always supported by life itself. Sometimes we are brought to our knees and we remember our knees, and nothing has happened from the perspective of the ground save for the bird song and the first light of dawn. I love it when life brings you to your knees and you get to surrender yet again to a presence that's always there, longing for us. Wow. Isn't life amazing? How it gives us exactly what we need. And if it needs to bring us to our knees, then let it bring us to our knees. So that we can discover, like Moses, that right where we are is holy ground, and it hasn't gone anywhere. Then our life becomes a prayer, and everything becomes a sacrament. And everything is holy now. Everything. Everything. You can feel it, can't you?
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.